How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, genetics radio show and podcast. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. DNA Today informs you on what's happening in the genetic world. During my broadcast here, I educate you, the public, on genetic and health topics through event coverage, news stories, book and movie reviews, and interviews. Typically, guests include genetic counselors, researchers, doctors, patient advocates, and professors. And today's episode is going to be all about Rare Disease Day. So this happened 2 days ago, if you're listening live, on February 28th, 2018. And it always occurs on the last day of February because when it's February 29th, it's the rarest day of the year. And Rare Disease Day is really an opportunity to raise awareness for the 7,000 plus rare diseases that exist. And there's 30 million Americans that are affected by either one rare disease or multiple. And the public may not realize this. That's 1 in 10 Americans. And so alone, all of these rare diseases are, in fact, rare. But when you put them together, they're not really rare. And so the theme for this year's Rare Disease Day was research and really the important role that patients play in gaining that understanding of rare diseases and developing different treatments or cures to really be able to move this along and really find those treatments and cures. And so there were events held worldwide to raise awareness. So it's not just the U.S. that participated. This is a really cool event that, all over social media, it's really great to see people from all different types of countries be involved. And the slogan for this year was, patients are not only subjects, but also proactive actors in research. And this is something we've seen more and more, that patients are becoming much more involved with their own healthcare. And so it's really kind of exciting to see that Rare Disease Day really embraced that and seeing that patients are typically their own best advocates, especially for their own personal health. So on today's episode, I have a couple interviews with presenters who I caught up with at the end of the Rare Disease Day event in Hartford, Connecticut that took place in the Legislative Office Building in the morning. And this specific event is one I've attended for a few years and provides an opportunity for patients, caregivers, medical professionals, and industry representatives to all come together kind of as a team and educate the elected officials about rare diseases. Like what it's like to live with or care for someone with a rare disease in the state was kind of the focus of the day. And so oftentimes a researcher would go up with a patient advocate and talk about a disease kind of from the two different perspectives of the research and how far we're coming along with that. And also from the caregiver or patient advocate expressing what it's actually like to live with a rare disease and all of the battles that can come with that. A main focus of the event was on newborn screening and just the impact it can have. Something that they brought up that was really exciting that I learned was that they are now including the addition of Pompe disease and MPS1 for Connecticut newborn screening. And it's really exciting to hear that Connecticut covers over 60 diseases. I think it was something around 68 diseases, including these new ones, for their newborn screening, whereas other states cover around 40 diseases. Obviously, it depends on the state you're looking at, but it's kind of great to know that Connecticut is really a leader in newborn screening, and oftentimes certain diseases will be included in our newborn screening panels before other states, so we're kind of a trailblazer in that way. And so I'm going to go through a couple of the different presentations and can't get to all of them, but just a few to highlight. One is a young man named Hunter spoke about his extremely rare disease called SMARD, which stands for spinal muscular atrophy with respiratory distress. And so SMARD is an aggressive respiratory neuromuscular disease that causes paralysis and inability for patients to breathe on their own. And to put this into perspective, I'm not using extremely rare as just kind of an adjective. It's actually a type of rare disease. And for this one in particular, Hunter is one of only 12 people in the United States that has this, that has this diagnosis. One in 12 in the U.S., and he's one in 80 worldwide. So that's why it's an extremely rare disease. And being the trailblazer he is, he started YES, which stands for Young Empowerment Society for Kids, and he really is a true inspiration and leader. I've enjoyed seeing him present for a few years now, and he's a seventh grader and very, very kind of throwing himself into patient advocacy and speaking up for himself. And it really was a pleasure to see him present as a kid with a rare disease and really just being able to be in front of a microphone in a room of a lot of people and to do that. Going with the theme of this year's Rare Disease Day being research, researchers shared how vital funding is to their research and the cascade effect that initial funding can have on getting further funding. So Dr. Stormy Chamberlain from UConn, she focuses on research of Angelman syndrome. She explained how the Connecticut Stem Cell Research Fund led to NIH funding later on and partnerships with pharmaceutical companies such as Alexion. And so it was very interesting to hear that dynamic and just kind of driving home the point that it's very important to get this research funding in order to be able to develop drugs to actually help people with rare diseases. And presenting alongside her was Jim Kay. He's a father of a child who has Angelman syndrome. And as a fierce patient advocate, he joined the Angelman Syndrome Foundation to help raise some of this research money that Dr. Chamberlain actually used. So he also shared some aspects of being the father of a child with a rare disease, including the burden of really expensive medications, full-time supervision of his son, and fighting for basic needs for his son at school. And so here's a clip of us catching up at the end of Rare Disease Day in Hartford. So I'm sitting here with Jim at Rare Disease Day in Hartford, and he just presented about Angelman syndrome. Can you explain kind of your role with the foundation and what you spoke about today?
Sure. So Jim Kibitzer from Cheshire, Connecticut, representing the Angelman Syndrome Foundation. I'm on the board of directors with them, and what we do is we advocate for quality research and family assistance throughout the country and actually throughout the world. Angelman syndrome is about 1 in 15,000 live births. It's most commonly a deletion on the 15th chromosome, which my son Cole has. He's 8 years old. And today I came here to speak about specifically our struggles and whatnot because of medications, Katie Beckett waivers, and help, realistically, trying to give all the therapies for my child and other children with it, but also the families need help too.
And it's a lot to handle, I can imagine, as a caregiver that, raising kids is hard enough, but to have another whole layer to it can really be a challenge. What are some of those challenges that you face and maybe ways that people listening can help in ways of maybe talking to their legislators of things that can change and affect you personally?
Respite care, plain and simple. If we could, my wife and I don't get out too often, so it's, struggles amongst married couples is even harder. I tend to think of myself as a success. They say that one in, half of all marriages, fail. And then I'm in car sales, so that adds to it. So add a car salesman, and now I add a special needs parent. So I'm 0 for 3, but I'm a success, I figure. So I say that as families and parents just need a little bit of help to stick together and keep together, to be able to actually live a kind of typical life. We have an older son. He'll be 10 in June, so he's about 19 months older than Cole. So it's kind of like we live two different lives, or actually three different lives, one as the entire family, one as a Cole family, one as a Lincoln family, but we try and include everybody all together, bringing Cole to typical stuff and Lincoln to special needs stuff. So having our legislatures be able to understand our struggles and to just offer a little bit of assistance in any way.
And so that's really the point of Rare Disease Day, is to be raising awareness and bringing families like yours in to share your stories. And so you guys aren't just numbers, you are people, and your family is kind of dealing with these issues. And so that's why it's so important for, you know, legislation to hear about this. Can you share a little bit more about your sons and, you know, what they're interested in?
Yeah, so I guess to go a little bit further, what you said, advocacy, that's the biggest word, is advocacy. Lincoln will be 10 in June. Very typical boy, loves playing Minecraft and playing with Legos, and so do I. He's taken up most recently Cub Scouting, so he is super involved with that. He's a huge help to our family and to Cole, so he's a great big brother and a very typical brother. So just like brothers do, they beat each other up. Cole just turned 8 in January. He has Angelman syndrome, and he's smart. Part of Angelman syndrome is being nonverbal, but there's nothing not communicative about him. He expresses everything and anything that he wants. He understands everything that we say. He's a joy. I'm holding a picture. So
he's adorable.
This is from last year, and just a smile on his face to see him looking out the window as I drive home, waiting for me and coming in and giving a smile and a hug. I couldn't ask for anything better. There's so many different disorders out there, of which that we saw today, where people have different abilities or disabilities, but it's great to be able to come home and just see a smiling face and you know, somebody that is just so lovable and I'm not sure what else to say.
Oh yeah, you're definitely a very proud father, and I think that comes across. And for those that don't know, what are some features of Angelman syndrome, just so that we're kind of telling people and raising awareness for the syndrome itself?
Yeah, so before it was diagnosed in the mid to late 90s by Dr. Angelman, it was known as the happy puppet syndrome. So people will actually flap their arms like a marionette almost, like they have strings on their hands and you're just kind of waving it up and down. The other is the smile. They have a very happy demeanor. So if you see a boy or a girl or a person with Angelman syndrome, they're always, always happy. Cole could be in pain and he still has a smile on his face. They have also other facial features, skin tones, so lighter skin, lighter hair. I mean, I'm blonde-haired, blue eyes, so obviously he is, but he's a little bit lighter than most, just because of the skin tone, because of the chromosome. That's where a lot of that stuff falls. But I guess those are physical characteristics. Other characteristics are seizures, typically start around 2 years old. For full seizures like he had absence seizures before his other seizures. I forget the name off the top of my head. I guess that's the best features or characteristics of Angelman syndrome.
That's definitely a very good overview. I learned about it in class and everything, and it's really nice to be able to actually meet someone that, you know, has a really important person in their life with that. And one thing that you mentioned is seizures, and in your talk today you were talking about how expensive these medications can be and just a burden on a family financially. How could we change that for people that kind of don't know about this?
Yeah, so the seizure medications, for instance, Cole is on Onfi, and most children with Angelman syndrome specifically cannot use generic seizure medications. So we have to go and get name brand. Luckily, we're on the Katie Beckett waiver. It took years for us to get on, but I was actually just speaking with another family with
Dravet syndrome.
Yes, yep, and she said that they're still on it 4 years later, and they didn't get on until 4 years after the diagnosis. So it's something that people don't know about. But the cost of these drugs is astronomical. But these kids, these people, need it to survive. I mean, if he wasn't on Onfi, I don't know what would happen.
Yeah, definitely. So it's something that, a lot of families that have rare diseases are on seizure medication. So that's something that kind of many have in common.
Right, right. And there's different varying seizure activities amongst Angelman individuals. Cole is on the lower end, so he's on a very light dose of Onfi. But, you know, we've used Topamax, we've used Keppra, we've used so many different medications. And he's also on sleep medications. These children just don't sleep. They maybe need 4 or 5 hours of sleep a day, and they're good to go, wide awake. He's pulled all-nighters for 2 days in a row, and it didn't even bother him.
And I'm sure that takes a toll on you, though, being a parent, that's really a challenge.
Right, on us.
Because you need more sleep than that.
Correct, us, yeah. That's the problem is you know, we have other ways to, you know, he's on quetiapine for, or Seroquel for his sleep, and that's just to give him a few hours of sleep so we could get our rest, because obviously, you know, without us functioning, my wife and I, we won't be able to provide for him.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time and just sharing about your family and everything and really raising awareness on Rare Disease Day. Really appreciate it.
Oh, sure. Is it okay if I just give a little plug?
Yes, all right, definitely.
So,
go for it.
So if you want to learn more, go to angelman.org. That's angelman.org. Everything you might want to know is on there. So I appreciate it.
Great. And we'll definitely provide more links on my website, dnapodcast.com. Thanks so much.
That's awesome. Thank you very much.
There was also a family with a daughter who has Dravet syndrome, and the mother, Beth Fox, shared about her daughter's 250 unconscious seizures that she's had in her lifetime, despite them trying multiple different medications and their battles with her insurance company for coverage, and really just getting into kind of daily life and different challenges that the family faces. And in a cute moment, her daughter joined her at the podium, really excited to introduce herself. So again, it's really great to see the kids getting involved and wanting to really be a part of raising awareness and making a really big impact. Another patient advocate who spoke was Jean Kelly, and her son Brian has a rare neurological disease called ALD, for which she started an organization, Brian's Hope. And so I learned more about her son and the organization in an interview with her after the event. So I'm here sitting with Jean Kelly, who is involved with Brian's Hope. And I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about what you've done today during Rare Disease Day and how you're raising awareness.
Today, I was asked to speak about newborn screening for adrenoleukodystrophy. My husband and I led legislation with Senator Len Fasano in 2013. It passed and it was implemented in October of 2015. And since then, we've identified 11 babies, 7 male and, or 13 babies, 7 male and 6 female. And why it primarily affects boys physically, girls are carriers. So those girls will go on to know in their childbearing years that they have the chance, 50-50 chance of passing the disease on to their children, and they would get genetic counseling and reproductive counseling and alleviate having to have a child with disabilities. And the boys will be followed by endocrinology, neurology, and genetic counseling. MRIs every 6 months. The importance is early detection so that these boys can be monitored, and if there were any change in their brain, that would indicate the need for a bone marrow transplant.
And so with the newborn screening, that really changes, saying that early detection is so important. If you're identifying a newborn, how does that change in terms of if someone's diagnosed later in life? What's the difference?
Well, for instance, Brian was diagnosed later in life. He was diagnosed when he was 6. And at that time, he was skiing expert trails and you know, a great student in first grade, and hit a wood pile while sled riding, and that led us to the ER for a CAT scan, and then they thought that it was something from birth that they saw in his brain, which led us to an MRI, and he was diagnosed. However, he was already, that actually exacerbated the disease, the injury to the head. So quickly his gait changed, his fine motor skills declined, and he was becoming symptomatic. So by the time he had a bone marrow transplant, it was not going to be as effective as if he was symptom free. But that was 22 years ago, and now the researchers have learned so much. In fact, if Brian were diagnosed in 2018 now, he would have been denied a bone marrow transplant. And at that point, the only thing you can do is watch the decline of your child, which is can be months to a couple of years. But the sadness and the tragedy is what drives us to help others prevent this disease.
And I really have to thank you on behalf of, you know, the rare disease community for, you know, being a strong advocate and speaking out and being a caregiver. I know that from talking to other people that it's a really, really tough role. And so really, on behalf of everyone, wanted to kind of thank you and commend you for that work. And part of that work is Brian's Hope. Can you kind of explain what this organization is and what your goals are?
Sure. Our goals are awareness of ALD, because adrenal leukodystrophy, people really don't know what it is. Doctors don't know what it is. So we're trying to make that, broaden that awareness. We raise funds for research, and we are promoting newborn screening in other states. So I've helped people in California, other patient advocates. Ohio has passed. They will probably be starting in end of 2018. So just continued advocacy, and we have a wonderful event called the Hammerfest Triathlon in September. We have about 300 athletes and a sprint distance triathlon. So that is our big fundraiser, and the support has grown over the years. So that's pretty exciting, but that's where we get our research money.
That's fantastic. And people can go to brianshope.org to learn more about that, correct?
Yes. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing on the show and just continuing your really passionate advocacy efforts.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Senators and representatives also spoke about their support for rare diseases, including the Connecticut Rare Disease Task Force. And this is a bipartisan group that focuses on newborn screening, as I've been mentioning before, along with insurance issues and support services in school systems, among other topics. And to put things into perspective, it takes $2.5 billion in 12 years to develop a drug. So obviously there's a lot of work that goes into that. And we really need to give tax credits to companies so that they have incentives to come to Connecticut to do this research, as that really helps the states and leads to other types of opportunities. And it's really fantastic that an event like this can bring legislators into the conversation so we can take action to help families with rare diseases. And having this event be in the atrium of the legislative office building, you know, you catch a lot of people's attention as they're walking by. And for our senators and representatives to kind of understand the struggles that rare disease families have, and to see how they can directly help these families is really, really vital. And so I'm really glad that this event exists to be able to raise awareness for rare diseases. And if you're looking to learn more about rare diseases, or you are a family that has a rare disease or are on the road to a diagnosis, check out NORDS, which is the National Organization for Rare Disorders. Their website is rarediseases.org. It's a fantastic resource for so many different things, but they can really connect you with others that are in your situation, either a similar rare disease or even the same rare disease. And so some plugs that I mentioned throughout the show, angelman.org. You can learn more there about Angelman syndrome that Jim and I were talking about earlier. And also briantshope.org that Gene and I were talking about. And so those two websites are from my guest today. If you want to learn more about the show, you can go to dnapodcast.com for all of the episodes, along with other mini lessons and all types of information. If you're interested in connecting with me on Twitter, you can go to @DNApodcast, also on Instagram @DNA Radio, a little bit newer there. And any questions you have, or if you have an interest in rare diseases and would like to learn more, I'm happy to put you in contact with other resources. You can email in at info@dnapodcast.com. And if it's too much to remember, just go to dnapodcast.com. Thanks for listening, everyone. And join me next week to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
We're all made of the same chemical DNA.